So, if you're someone who's interested in the paranormal, you're probably very familiar with alien abductions. You've probably even listened to the Bizarre of Bizarre episode about grey aliens and the possible psychology behind some people who claim to be abductees. But for this yarn, I want to go on about one of the most terrifying alien encounters ever recorded, in my opinion. This may go beyond dreams or delusions, because there were multiple witnesses and physical manifestations. And not to mention, those large red eyes. Were they aliens? Or perhaps even demons? This yarn is about the enigmatic Kelly Cahill abduction. Hello there and welcome. I'm your host Elle, and you're listening to one of many bizarre yarns. Just a quick note before we start, Kelly and Andrew Cahill are pseudonyms. Understandably, I wouldn't use my real name either if I had a claim as such. And I'm also so sorry that I didn't get this out sooner. Now, on to the story. Back in August in the year of 1993, 27-year-old Kelly and her husband at the time, Andrew, were driving home from the Gippsland area, where they had lived, to Monbulk to see their friend Eva. It was on this quiet drive that Kelly saw something that caught her eye. As they were nearing Belgrave South, beyond the scatter of trees that lined the road, Kelly saw a row of large orange lights that seemed to be from a large object that was on the paddock. There was what she described was some sort of fluorescent mist that surrounded these lights. Upon further observation, this object where the lights were coming from was circular, with the lights basically dotting the outer perimeter of it. But in a flash, this oddity vanished. At the time, it was only Kelly that saw something, since Andrew was focused on the road ahead. She told him that she just saw a UFO, but Andrew rebuffed her, saying that it was probably just a helicopter. But Kelly insisted it wasn't, but her husband continued to give snarky remarks back and dismiss her. When they finally arrived at their destination, Andrew dropped Kelly off at Eva's house and went off to go catch up with friends, while Kelly and Eva went to a bingo night. At around 11 p.m, they met back at Eva's and then departed the town for the hour and a half drive back home. As they drove on in the night, they now both saw something out of the ordinary. Up ahead, they had seen a blimp-shaped object hovering in the sky, but this thing appeared to be made of light. However, as they drove closer to it, they saw that it was actually a row of large orange lights. They could just make out that there were silhouettes of people within the orange circular lights. Perhaps they were windows to this large craft. As soon as Kelly pointed out that there were people there, the craft shot off to the left and in a matter of seconds, it was out of sight. But not too long after, the road ahead was illuminated by a strong light, so intense Kelly had to shield her eyes with her hand. And in a flash, everything was dark again. Then the couple drove on slowly, but something felt off. The Cahills were disoriented and lethargic for some reason. Kelly wondered what happened and where did the dazzling light disappear to. But Andrew guessed that they turned a corner away from it and dismissed Kelly further when she tried asking more questions. As soon as they got home, though, Kelly noticed that the clock read 2:30 a.m., which meant that their typical hour and a half trip took much longer. But Andrew presumed that they probably left later than they thought, hence the time. The pair had coffee and discussed what they saw, and Andrew was visibly and verbally uncomfortable with the idea that they saw a UFO. Coming from a Muslim background, Andrew felt that UFOs and other paranormal things were evil, and would rather not talk or even think about it. Things got even weirder for Kelly. As she got ready for bed, Kelly went to the toilet and saw that there was blood in her underwear and had soaked through her jeans. And she was still bleeding, despite it not being that time of month for her. While it's not uncommon to lightly bleed or spot between periods, a sudden heavy flow would make anybody concerned. She then changed out of her clothes, but as she was undressing, she noticed something just under her navel. It was a mark that appeared to have been carved deep into her skin, a red equilateral triangle just under her navel. There's no such word as worser, but that's precisely what happened to Kelly's life after that incident. Within 3 weeks after the bizarre drive home, Kelly's health deteriorated. She was plagued with migraines, was losing weight, and eventually had to spend the night in hospital to be treated for a womb infection. Apparently, doctors were stumped as to why she had these symptoms. And if it wasn't enough, a few days after the stint in hospital, the disturbing visitations began. In bed alone, Kelly drifted off to sleep, and before too long, she began to vividly dream. She dreamt she was in her bed, as is, but she could just about sense that she wasn't alone. Then she heard a voice that told her, "Do not be afraid." And soon thereafter, she felt some sort of vacuum get affixed to her chest, and then felt the suction get stronger over time. Kelly snapped out of the dream world and entered reality. But what she saw was something only found in nightmares. Standing beside the bed watching over her was a tall, shadowy figure wearing a black hooded cloak. She could just make out a long, dark face with sloped cheekbones and dull red eyes that seemed to stare right into her soul. But not too long after, the figure merely vanished. Kelly ran out to the lounge where Andrew was and told him what happened, but Andrew reassured her that it was most likely a waking dream. The experience rattled Kelly that much that for the next couple of years, understandably, Kelly slept with the lights on. The thing had come to see her a total of 4 times within 5 months. Strangely enough, Kelly's memories about the UFO sightings had lapsed, and at one point she completely forgot about the strange airborne lights her and Andrew saw on the drive home that August night. At one point, Kelly, Andrew, and another couple they were friends with were having a chit-chat, and the topic of UFOs was brought up. Andrew mentioned what they saw, but Kelly couldn't remember. It was almost as if someone or something wanted to erase her memories. But in October, Kelly began to piece together the fuzzy memories of that night when they once again drove through the Dandenong Ranges to go see Eva. As they neared that certain part of the road, Kelly vaguely remembered some things that she previously didn't remember before. When they arrived at Eva's, she decided not to go with her friend to the bingo night and instead sat alone and continued to try and recount the sequence of events that happened a couple of months prior. By the time that Eva came home from the bingo night, Kelly had only managed to recall the first 15 minutes of what went down. It was overwhelming and had exhausted Kelly. She recalled that after driving into the dazzling light, they realized that they had gone off the road, as if they were transfixed. The source of the light was in the middle of the field, and it appeared to have been a massive craft of some sort. They stopped the car and got out, fearlessly walking towards this enigma on the field. Along with the Cahills, there were two other cars that were parked, one of which was a bright blue one, which is important to know later. And the other people also made their way towards the mesmerizing view. As they got closer, however, this extraordinary phenomenon turned frightening. A very tall, dark, and not so handsome figure had suddenly appeared in front of the craft. It was about 2 meters tall and had large red eyes that appeared to glow. Kelly declared that this thing was soulless, and not before long, more identical humanoids had appeared, gliding above the ground, making their way towards them. Before she knew it, Kelly felt the sensation that she had been struck in the abdomen and was laying down before managing to sit back up. But she couldn't see a thing and was nauseated. Wherever she was had no lights. Then she heard her husband speak in a fearful voice, quote, "Let go of me." And disturbingly, someone responded. The voice, seemingly audible rather than telepathic, said, "We don't mean you any harm." But Kelly was defiant. She kept yelling at their captors to let them go and essentially nick off. But the captors insisted that they were quote-unquote peaceful people. And apparently, in response to Kelly's outbursts, a voice calmly but condescendingly asked, quote, "Will someone please do something about her?" Unquote. As she verbally tried fighting back, Kelly could sense someone beside her, and they gently placed their hand on her shoulder. And the next thing she knew, she was back in the car. Later, after Andrew picked her up from Eva's place, Kelly decided to relay what she remembered. But being the supportive husband he was, he didn't believe a single word and flat out told her she was bonkers. Kelly, wanting to get to the bottom of what happened to her, decided to reach out to try and find someone that was willing to hear her story. She rang up various universities and organizations, and she finally got referred to ufologist Bill Chalker. They got into contact, but since Bill was too far away from Kelly, as he lived in Sydney, he gave all of the information to an associate based in Victoria, John Ockertel of Phenomena Research Australia, aka the PRA. Then, when Kelly and John made contact, he assured the young mother that she wasn't the only one that experienced this seemingly crazy series of events. John learned later that Kelly wasn't well versed in other UFO cases or ufology in general, and he wanted to keep it that way. So he put her on a book ban as a way to keep her retelling as genuine as possible. Reading other UFO literature would likely skew her story. Kelly did a questionnaire and also wrote down her recollection of the abduction. They also had tracked down the other people that were present on that night. 3 other people had come forward after responding to an ad. A man and his wife, along with their female friend. Lo and behold, they were the occupants of that blue car. Just to let you know, for most of the investigation, these witnesses were not in contact or introduced to Kelly and Andrew. They were travelling down the same road in the Dandenongs when suddenly, they all came down with a pang of nausea. The feeling was so overwhelming that the male driver even lost control of the car and ended up hitting a pole. They pulled over and got out of the car to check for any damage. And since the car was still in working condition, they started back on the road. After 2 cars had passed them on the road, they saw the UFO. The women remembered being on the ship and encountering the tall humanoids with glowing red eyes. Although they couldn't see other human beings or each other on the craft, the women could somehow communicate telepathically, and both described that some sort of physical examination was being made on them. They later discovered physical manifestations on their bodies. Both had rashes on their thighs and ring-like indentations on their legs that lasted about a fortnight. One woman also complained of swelling in her private area. Lastly, they also both had a triangular marking just under their belly buttons. The man, on the other hand, could barely remember anything beyond stopping the car. He couldn't remember seeing a UFO or nothing of the sort, and even going under hypnosis didn't dredge up much except that he was on the craft, but couldn't remember seeing much, only some smells and sounds. Kelly and the two women were asked to make sketches of the ship and the humanoid entities, independent of each other, of course, and the drawings all had similarities. Anyway, regarding the spaceship, all three women drew a saucer-shaped thing that had round lights on the perimeter of the craft. The portraits of their alleged captors all depicted a bald, elongated face with very large eyes that took up basically half the face and no other distinguishable facial features. These portraits look cursed, and if I had to see them, then so do you. I'll put them up on Instagram later. A few years later, another eyewitness came forward, a man who had been driving alone that night when he too saw the UFO in the field. He had spoken to other UFO researchers with encouragement from his wife, but they weren't so interested in his story, so he eventually decided to let it go. It wasn't until he read about Kelly's experience that was published in a magazine that he came forward again, since it was on the same night and in the same area. Now, another thing that was addressed was the triangular branding that was under Kelly's navel. She had completely forgotten about it until she was finally allowed to read literature after the book ban was lifted. It was then she put two and two together when she learned that other abductees had triangular markings on their bodies after their encounters. When she told John this, he revealed that the other two women also had the familiar marking in the same spot. Furthermore, tests were conducted at the site where the UFO was believed to be. They found that there were several anomalies, such as a change in the soil chemistry and abnormal magnetic behaviour. They also discovered a patch of dead grass that was shaped in a perfect triangle, and a crescent-shaped indentation in the ground. Clearly, there was something crazy that happened here. Towards the end of the investigation, the witnesses wished to remain anonymous, hence the pseudonyms and the other witnesses not being named at all. They told the PRA about what happened to them, and that was it. And in the end, after all that time spent investigating this encounter, the PRA never published an official report. Because of this, our friend Bill Chalker wished he never passed Kelly's case onto them if he knew that this was going to be the end result. However, the reason why we know of this case in detail is because Kelly published a book about her experience, aptly titled Encounter. She had also published magazine articles and participated in some interviews. Nowadays, Kelly is somewhere on planet Earth, probably living life privately and moving on from this chapter in her life. She had since split up from Andrew. Hopefully, though, there will be no more surprise nighttime visitors heading her way. So now we get to the nitty-gritty of the episode and discuss what went on. This is an encounter that had multiple witnesses that basically described the same things. Though, if we were to think skeptically, we could theorise that what Kelly and the other witnesses saw was a mass hallucination. We don't know how long everyone was travelling for, and it was late in the night when the encounter happened. A possibility could be that the witnesses were all fatigued from travelling on the road for too long and saw something that they thought was a flying saucer. And that doesn't explain the tangible evidence of something that went down, like marks on the skin and the physical symptoms they had after they were allegedly brought into the spacecraft, and the strange things that were found on the field where the craft was seen. And if all the witnesses were mistaken, and the massive bright shiny thing they saw wasn't an alien's mode of transportation, what could it have actually been? Well, perhaps if we consulted a government official, they'd tell us that it was just a weather balloon or the planet Venus. I'm at a total loss as to what the people driving along that night saw, if it wasn't a UFO. The next plausible argument is that the whole thing was a hoax. Maybe it was all made up. The whole thing was just a fictional story authored by Kelly, and that these witnesses, the red-eyed entities, were all born from her imagination. After all, there was no official report published about the UFO sighting and abduction, and the other witnesses were conveniently not named and wanted to remain anonymous rather than use a pseudonym like Kelly and Andrew. Perhaps this was all a ploy for a book deal and interviews, and bam, the royalties come rolling in. We also can't forget the possibility of drugs, alcohol, and an unsound mind, the holy trinity of paranormal skeptics. It could be possible that Kelly had a few drinks during the bingo session, and that probably altered her better judgment. We also don't know whether she dabbled in psychedelics or had a mental breakdown. We can only speculate. And based on her constantly describing her ex-husband Andrew as dismissive of what she saw, it could be that Andrew truly experienced no such ordeal, rather than be in denial of seeing a UFO or being aboard one. The recollection of being on a spaceship could have been a dream. Perhaps she dozed off in the car and had this vivid dream. But one thing I do find weird is that Kelly used a fake name since she wanted to remain anonymous, yet she made appearances on TV. You'd think that someone would recognise her, right? For example, a neighbour would see the interview and be like, "Hey, isn't that Michelle from up the road?" Or something like that. I don't know. Unless they hired an actress to be a proxy for the real Kelly. I'm not too sure how that worked. Anyhow, because the PRA didn't release their report that Kelly Cahill was a pseudonym, a lack of tangible evidence, and of the ambiguity of other witnesses such as her ex-husband, it's easy for people to believe that this whole thing may be an elaborate, money-making, attention-seeking hoax. But that being said, I don't think she has a reason to lie about that sort of thing. I don't know. Anyway, I gotta make this quick. I've been caught up with a lot of things in my personal life, and I kinda had to put this episode on the back burner for a while. Like always, thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you for being patient. It means a lot to me. This episode was a bit of a doozy, and I hope you enjoyed it. And what do you think? Do you think she made it all up, or do you think she's actually genuinely telling the truth? Let me know. As always, show me some love by giving me a decent rating on whatever podcatcher you use and spread the word. Recommend these episodes to your friends, family, and the door-knocking salesman. Stay safe, be kind to yourself and others, lock your doors and windows, and always look up when you're out and about at night. You might not like what you see. Alright, until next time, see you later.
Thank you for tuning in to Bizarre Yarns. This episode was researched, written, and edited by El Host. Now, we're all here to have a good time. We all have different backgrounds, ideas, and opinions, and I would like to ask you to please be respectful and mindful of other listeners and followers. If you have any questions or just want to give your two cents, contact me via email or Instagram, Twitter, all of which are in the show notes. Again, I'm grateful for you listening and I look forward to the next yarn.